Empower Radio presents The Miracle of Healing with Lisa Campion. Meet healers, learn different modalities, and hear empowering stories of people on their healing journey. The Miracle of Healing on Empower Radio. Here's your host, Lisa Campion.
Hello, I'm Lisa Campion, and this is The Miracle of Healing on Empower Radio, where conscious people come together to explore the world of healing and heal the planet one person at a time. What better way to heal the planet than a miracle? Honestly, sometimes I think it'll take a miracle. So I'm glad that we have somebody who not only believes in miracles, but has studied them extensively and written about them. Really want to welcome onto the show Dr. Michael Grosso. And he has this beautiful book called Smiles of the Universe, Miracles in the Age of Disbelief. And we're going to talk today about miracles. Are they real? Can we believe in them? How do we fit them into the framework that we live in now? How do we believe in them scientifically or philosophically? I'm super happy to have this conversation with you today, Dr. Michael Grosso. How are you today?
I'm actually quite fine.
Good.
And delighted to be here with you.
Thank you. So I know that you are a professor of philosophy and also of the classics. How did you come from to being interested in the world, in the idea or the story of miracles?
Well, that's sort of easy for me to explain. As a philosopher, I acquired very early on an interest in the nature of mind. And what I found was that most of my colleagues and teachers in the course of my education tended to be materialists and not altogether open to the reality of the mind or the reality of extraordinary phenomena that depend on the existence of the mind. And the reason I reacted to that, what I perceived as narrowness, was the fact that I myself have had, from time to time, unexplainable experiences. So that's the first step. The second step was, if I'm going to study extraordinary phenomena, I want to really go for the big ones, the miracles, the ones that hit the imagination very powerfully. But my main rule was to be sure that the focus is on case histories where there's lots of evidence.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not into playing games with the near real, but I want to be convinced that these things take place, just as I was convinced that I had certain kinds of experiences that no one was going to talk me out of believing in. And so that's pretty much the background of my exploration. My own experiences, and moreover, the fact that I was a professor of philosophy, had to teach classes how to talk about the nature of the mind. So that's pretty much what got me into this.
And how does the mind connect in with this? Like, you know, you write in your book that maybe we have to be predisposed to believe in miracles. We might even see them or experience them, but if we don't have a mind that is open to them, we might not credit them. What does the mind have to do with this?
Well, the mind has everything in it to do with them, but it is a fact that many of the really remarkable so-called miracles or paranormal events that interest me presuppose or involve unusual states of mind. In other words, it's not likely that you're going to levitate when you're a train going to work in the morning or something like that and absorb the activities of the day. But if you're in a, if you've been fasting, meditating, focusing your mind, narrowing, sort of in a sense, it seems to have the effect of opening up the pores of your reality, of your human reality, so to speak. Now, exactly how they take place is a mystery to science and to religious believers. So I'm only interested in the facts indicating that these things occur. I have some speculative ideas about how they occur. And it's also essential to have a mind that's open One of the variables that I noticed that's related to people who have miraculous experience is that they expect, they intensely believe in the possibility. And one of the most obvious examples, the phenomenon of the placebo, which I'm sure you know all about because you're interested in healing.
Yeah.
And again, there, it's the state of mind, the belief that sometimes has healing effects.
Right.
As a matter of fact, turns out that placebos are almost as good as the chemicals that are used to try to diminish the effect of depression.
And what about, like, how, let's define miracles a little bit about what constitutes a miracle, do you think? Or what are some good examples?
The key for me as a, in terms of clarity, apart from the subjective sense of a miracle, that it's astonishing and wonderful, and that's important, is the notion that I characterize as miracles events that we can't explain physically. Now, some of those physical mysteries, like ordinary everyday telepathy, I wouldn't necessarily call a miracle, only in a certain sense. So, because I do emphasize the more dramatic things like levitation and instantaneous healings and so forth. But so that's the key. And that, of course, is a challenge to mainstream science, because mainstream science tends to be oriented toward reductive materialism and explaining everything. And it's great when they're talking about chemistry and physics.
Right.
But the human mind is connected with the brain, but it's not identical with the brain. So the focus then is on the mind. And as for examples, I've sort of hinted already at some of what I would call miracles. Levitation, for example. I wrote two books about the phenomenon of levitation. It is the unexplained behavior of a body that seems to contradict the laws of gravity, right? The other neat thing about levitation, it's not you don't have to be a brain scientist or to observe that somebody has levitated in a state of ecstasy.
Right?
So you don't have to be a quantum physicist to analyze levitation. So that would be one example, and I could go on. Materialization, dematerialization, these are all strange things, admittedly quite strange. And but there's a huge amount of literature to convince the reader. You have to study the literature closely. And I've tried to make available in my book a variety of miraculous phenomena. And I don't have all the answers, but there's enough there for the reader to wake up to the possibilities.
I was really taken with the story of the flying monk. I can see why you wrote a whole book about him, because that whole story is so interesting. And so it's been just incredibly widely documented. Like, hundreds of people have seen it, hundreds of like people who are sent by the Vatican to confirm it. And that's this kind of thing is that that's quite remarkable. I mean, it was such a fascinating story.
Well, yeah, as a matter of fact, we have 150 sworn witnesses, from surgeons to popes to everyday people. So the evidence there. But the fact of the matter, in terms of Joseph of Cupertino, he had to have been seen airborne, if you will, thousands of times, for the simple reason that for 35 years, he never stopped demonstrating his strange involuntary ability. And he even prayed that it would stop, because everybody was following him, watching him, and that the Inquisition was interested in his motivations and how he felt about it. Because the only other way the church could imagine someone could levitate other than God's intervention is diabolic intervention.
Right.
I don't believe that. I believe this is our natural, although intense religious belief does tend to intensify the likelihood of many of these phenomena occurring.
So it seems to me, I mean, my background is more from a spiritual, seeker kind of perspective. And it seems to me like the common denominator in these, because it's all over the world. It's not just, in one culture. This is a phenomenon that happens all over the world, and that it seems like the people who are highly invested in their spiritual growth. So monks, people who meditate, people who chant, people who practice intense mind, you know, training, like you talked about. Is it really about the mind, or is it more about our spiritual, like, attainment? Like, you reach a certain level of spiritual mastery, and then the gift of healing and the cities, you know, like, or the charismas, you know, however you want to say it, are become available to us when we reach a level of spiritual mastery.
Well, yes, I use the word, you know, the word, one of the advantages of being a philosopher is you're supposed to be very careful about how you use words. And most of the time, we're not that precise. But I use the word mind to describe all aspects of our inner life, including the spiritual.
Got it.
Not every mental event is spiritual.
Right.
But so the answer to your question is yes, it's fundamentally mental. It's coming from the mind, and that's why it's a challenge to physical science.
And you talk in your book, you talk about the mind at large. So we have our personal mind, but then we're also somehow connected to the mind at large, and that this plays into it. What is that, the mind at large?
Well, you know, most people, even materialists, admit they have minds, but personal minds that are dependent on their brain function. On the other hand, many philosophers have come to see the mind as not merely a personal manifestation, but rather that our personal minds are part of a greater mind. But we don't experience that great mind all of the time for a simple reason: we're absorbed in our bodily existence. We're focusing our attention on the business of eating, sleeping, finding, interacting with other people, worldly use of our minds. But the idea, I mean, how to get at the concept of big mind is a kind of, for me, was a slow process, I must admit. And the role of the paranormal was significant. And other philosophical arguments suggest that the mind itself has no boundaries. A physical object, you can break it down to parts, but look into your mind, and what you experience is something that's all one. You can't slice up a memory, for example.
Right.
You can't reduce it to some components. The mind is one. There's no reason to doubt that the oneness extends to all minds, even though we normally experience only our own minds. Supernormally, we sometimes get out of our private minds. If that didn't happen, I wouldn't be here talking to you.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying. It's sort of like our personal mind is the, you know, more has the limitations, you know, the limitations of science and rules, the rules of physics that we have to obey, you know, gravity and things like that, right? And
then
the larger mind, this bigger mind, like you said, if it's like a collective consciousness, or a cosmic consciousness, then that's sort of, it's got its own set of rules that maybe when we tap into that, then we can do bilocation or transmutation, or, you know, those kinds of levitation, those kinds of things that are outside those parameters of the small mind.
Absolutely. And it also has something to do with the intensity of the focus. Individuals well known for accomplishing extraordinary mental or spiritual feats, they're not just using their everyday mind in an everyday manner. They're messing with it all of the time. It could be sometimes they're taking drugs in indigenous cultures to open the mind up, or they're meditating, or they're repeating mantras, not just a couple of times, but thousands of times for hours at great length, achieving the effects they're aiming to produce.
Right. Well, I was curious about reading this. Like, I mean, so many of these things seem like they happened in the past. I know you started out your book talking about, you know, the proliferation of bleeding and crying statues that happened sort of in the 90s, that was kind of a thing. But clearly we don't have, as far as I know, people levitating like that in our modern world. Why do you think that is? Does it still happen, or does it not happen anymore?
Well, we don't know what's going on in this big world, right? Who knows what's going on with some Hindu mystics floating around maybe in the Himalayas or whatever. But as a matter of fact, There are instances of levitation taking place, but they are clearly quite rare. I have one case of a woman. She was traveling through Spain and with a friend and went into a church and noticed a nun by herself in the front of the church on her knees praying. And suddenly the lady rose up into the air, and the woman who was with my friend literally fainted. She was so shocked at the strangeness of it. So there are cases. I myself performed an experiment in a class with another teacher and 25 or so students, in which, with the help of four ladies who just touched an ex-Marine and were able to levitate him high, up as far as their hands could raise. And then instead of crashing down when he fell, he just sort of floated down. I witnessed this myself. The whole class witnessed it. The guy who went up into the air, the look on his face, this must have been now, I'd say 30 years ago. It's as vivid in my mind's eye, the look on that guy's face when he went up in the air. So, yes, we're talking about a rare phenomenon, and there are also partial levitations. But the point is, yes, they still occur, but it's still a relatively rare phenomenon. And we don't have too many saints like Saint Joseph wandering around today.
Padre Pio has always been one of my favorite. I loved Padre Pio. I love the Christian mystics. I love mystics of any kind. I've always been interested in mysticism. Uh-huh. And so their story, and that's, I think, why I like your book so much. You know, I don't know if they're close to enlightenment, if they've reached enlightenment already, and when they reach enlightenment, they're now able to tap into that larger field that you're talking about. I'm just wondering, like, in this day and age when things are so weird, you know, out in the world, you know, here we are in, you know, in September 2020, we need some miracles. Like, how can we use this idea, or what can we gain from it in our modern life right now?
Well, I have actually written a few posts on my blog about this and suggest that we're with the enforced retreat into solitude. The idea is to stay home and avoid contact. But I see this as a wonderful opportunity for people to withdraw into their inner selves, to meditate. And I'm not saying miracles are going to arise if you're meditating to calm yourself down in the course of the day. But the general tendency to go inward is one of the variables that tends to be conducive to miracles. The other thing is, the more our lives break down and the more chaos, the more we're uprooted from our normal mental habits, the more likely unusual revelatory experiences tend to take place. The most obvious example would be the near-death experience. I myself had a near-death experience in a dream. A long time ago, was just exactly being of light. I met that being in my dream life. Other people are just very, very depressed, very anxious. They will have a spontaneous flowering of a near-death-like revelation of consciousness. So I'm thinking that we're at a time of crisis all over the world, and we have a lot of the common sense of humanity is working on our behalf today, at least some of us, maybe not all of us. Time of crisis and time of inward focus that are associated with unusual breakthroughs of consciousness.
So there's opportunity here. There's an opportunity.
I think so.
Yeah, in the disruption, in this disruption of our normal life to seek a more transcendent experience, a more inward experience.
And, I mean, very often extraordinary things just happen without aiming for it. That's important to realize. It is the aiming, the goal-oriented nature of consciousness does tend to liberate these powers, but often they just transform us, and it's unpredictable. I think that's kind of fun to think that
too.
We're living in a world where any moment a miracle can happen.
Sort of hopeful, isn't it?
It's not. Yeah, it does. It does allow us to be more open and more hopeful.
I mean, I think for me, it's always miracles have always been about maybe providing us faith in moments, you know, reinforcing faith in the moments when we really need it the most. You're also an artist,
yes.
and we're running out of time, but I also want to share with our audience how to reach you and to show your beautiful website about your artwork. I thought your artwork was stunning, and I had a really interesting, you know, fun time looking at it, and I wanted to get, you know, give everyone an opportunity to take a look at it and also to see your book. So your book, Smiles of the Universe, is available on Amazon, right?
Right.
Yeah. And I think it's, I would really encourage you guys to go, if you feel like you need some miracle, some like faith, your faith restored or the energy of the miracles in your life. It was a delightful book. I loved it. And I hope, you know, everybody can get a chance to read it.
Oh, I very much appreciate that, what you're saying. And I recommend it too, for as a stimulus to
right.
the soul.
Okay, yes.
The soul needs to be stimulated and fed now and then.
It does. And your artwork too, is, I'm sure. I thought your artwork was a really interesting, you know, look at, like, 'cause I'm a psychic, you know, and I always wish I could paint what I see. I wish I could draw or paint what I'm perceiving. Mm-hmm. And what I felt mm-hmm. about your art was that you were painting the psyche. That's a perfect way to put it. And it's really great stuff.
Thank you. Thank you so much. I got into painting as a result. I kept dreaming of paintings. I'm creating this stuff in my head. I think maybe I'll get a piece of canvas and do a painting myself. And since that time, I don't dream of painting.
Oh,
I just
that's
make
good.
Them instead.
That's great. That's wonderful. Well, Michael, thank you so much for being with us today. It was beautiful to have you on the show, and your book was amazing. And I appreciate that you wrote it and that you're here with us today.
Well, thank you so much, Lisa. I really appreciate it. And Tony, too.
Sure.
Thank you.
Thank you. And thank all of you guys for joining us on The Miracle of Healing today. You can find me on my website, lisacampion.com. Come by and visit. I'd love to hang out with you. And thank you for being with us on The Miracle of Healing, where we are healing the planet one person at a time, right here on Empower Radio.